Hello, and welcome to If Only We Knew What We Know, otherwise known as Knowledge Management. First, I want to really thank you for taking the time to listen to this. I know it's an investment on your part, and it's one that I promise will pay off. Knowledge management is something that has taken the business world by storm since 1995 or so, and they've had incredible results. And this tool implemented in the camping industry, I think, will prove no less promising. So thank you again for taking the time. Okay, on to slide number 2. Here are the contents at a glance. So basically, we're going introduction, talk about the survey, why this is useful and interesting, the process of doing it, some facilitators that help it along, and then we'll wrap things up. And if you print out the handout, which I highly recommend, you need it as you go along here, you'll see that on the very front, there's an outline. And if you keep that in front of you, it might help you understand where we are and where we're going. All right, on to slide 3. Realities and caveats. This isn't a 2-day seminar training. There are such things available on knowledge management and even longer. The American Productivity and Quality Center runs one. IBM runs another one. There's anywhere from 2 to 5 day residential trainings on knowledge management. And this is going to be far, far shorter, just a little over an hour or so, maybe even less. It is a thorough overview of knowledge management and one that will be enough to definitely get you started and get going. And probably with the other resources I've given you, enough to move forward and do it yourself. Please keep in mind as I go along that I'm presenting the ideal, the best practice. These elements that go into a knowledge management system are many and diverse. And what I'm presenting are the highest level of where they can be, in the camp environment anyway, in my mind. So as we go along, if these things aren't present at your camp, or you're not as high as you would like to be, or they seem impossible to implement, know that this is the best practice and that knowledge management systems range along a continuum. And we'll be talking about that more in a little while. Also, if you're trying to get a knowledge management system going, it's something that needs to be done gradually. If you go 0 to 100 in a summer, you're going to have G-force shock and it's going to be brutal. It has to be something that's sort of eased into. And I'll talk about this more again as we get into the implementation side. You can't ask any questions since this is a one-way sort of presentation, but you can email me and I will answer and help you out. Okay, again, you're going to need the handout, so please print that out or have it open and handy. All right, on to slide 4. The survey. Take some time and complete the survey. So hit pause on the audio if you haven't done it already, and take the survey and then hit play again. Okay, so now that you've done the survey, how did you score? If it was 15 to 34, thank you very much for listening to this. If it was 35 to 54, there's definitely some room to grow stronger, and we'll talk about how to do that. And if you're up there in the 55 to 70 range, please tell me what you're doing that I am not going to already cover throughout this presentation, because you've definitely come up with some methods that are probably very useful, but just not known throughout the industry or to myself yet. Okay, on to slide 5. The goal of knowledge management is to ensure that the right people have the right knowledge at the right time, so that they can do a better job of achieving valuable outcomes with less resources. Let me say this one more time, because this is really vital. To ensure that the right people have the right knowledge at the right time, so they can do a better job of achieving valuable outcomes with less resources. In other words, to do more with less, better. All right, on to slide 6. Let me tell you 3 stories at 2 different camps here. Camp Knowledge is Power, and Camp Reinvent the Wheel. So, one element is innovation is captured through knowledge management. At one camp, they had shoe golf. It's this game where you flick your shoe off your foot, and you kind of play it like golf. This was a great game, and it was really popular. And then it sort of fell out of favor, and the counselor who was really into it didn't come back. And then the staff, after 3 or 4 years, was pretty new, and everyone had sort of forgotten about it. That was at Camp Reinvent the Wheel. At Camp Knowledge is Power, even though the same sort of thing happened, someone picked it up again later, because the game, Shoe Golf, was captured. And when someone else was enthusiastic about it, they just brought it back. And they knew about it because it was in the Knowledge Management Center. Flaming Arrow. At Camp Reinvent the Wheel, they had a flaming arrow ceremony where they lit this fire spirit. It was a dramatic thing, and the campers loved it. But when the archery fellow left, and there was no one really left who knew how to shoot a flaming arrow or was quite good enough or knew the whole process, it didn't really get done, and then it just sort of faded off. At Camp Knowledge is Power, even though that same counselor left, the flaming arrow, how to do it, the process involved, all the little tidbits necessary, the power pack for putting this whole thing together, was captured so that when somebody else came in, they were able to do it based on that knowledge. Ravine Zipline. One camp had this big ravine between two sides, and they just ran a zip line back and forth. And they ran campers back and forth as a way of transportation. It was really neat. But then weather took down the zip lines, and they never really put them back up for a couple of years, and then it just kind of fell. They tried to put it back up, it fell out of favor, and then it was just sort of forgotten about. And a few years later, no one even remembered. The only person who really knew was the director and assistant director who were there through the whole time. But later, it sort of came back up, and somebody tried to reinstitute it, but they decided they just didn't really know enough about it anymore, and there wasn't enough enthusiasm. At Camp Knowledge is Power, they captured all the elements involved in the zip line so that it was easy to reinstitute and easy to excite people about it. Same thing for a wood kiln. Difficult to use. There was a video about how to use it at Knowledge is Power. There was explicit instructions, everything you needed to know to get that thing going. At Camp Reinvent the Wheel, there was just a wood kiln out there. James's story. James told this incredible story to his cabin, and they just loved it, and everyone was wanting to ask him. He'd go around the different cabins, and he'd tell that story. And that story, even after James left, was around for a little while at both camps. And then it just kind of faded away as the staff came and go and ebbed and flowed. And at Knowledge is Power, later on, that story came back because it was captured. And lastly, the picture, as you can see here, of a catapult. This catapult, can't see behind it, but there's a castle there, a wooden castle that you can climb up in and do stuff with. And these counselors felt it really needed a catapult. So they built this medieval siege machine using historically accurate methods. Well, that was great, except once those two counselors were gone after that summer, no one really knew how to use it, or maintain it, or operate it, or transport it, or anything. However, at Camp Knowledge is Power, they made sure that those two counselors documented everything about that catapult. How they built it, how to use it, they videoed it, they had them write about it, they took photographs. So after they were gone, it was no problem. Okay, on to the next slide. People-to-people effort. So up in the top left, this counselor is thinking, you know, I really want to do with astronomy with my cabin, but I don't know very much about it. At Camp Reinvent the Wheel, that was kind of where it ended. Looked in the library, kind of got a book about it, wasn't helpful enough. At Camp Knowledge is Power, they had a system to transfer people-to-people knowledge. They plugged each other into each other's brains, and they had a formal system for doing that. So, a lady on the right would say, you know, that was my minor in school astronomy, even though I taught drama at camp. Another on the left, the bottom, was saying, you know, this kid is driving me crazy, and everyone keeps picking on her, and she's such a snot, and I feel like picking on her. I'm just about to rip my hair out at this kid. Well, I can't reinvent the wheel. Nobody really knew anything about that kid in its past. You know, the counselor who was there didn't really have anything to say. There were no reports written, and there's not much information given to her. At Camp Knowledge is Power, the counselor who had her would say, you know, I had her last year, and I had the same problems last time. Here, let me help you. Or the supervisor might say, you know, I've had a lot of experience with this. Here, let me help you. Or, I haven't had a lot of experience with this, but let's go to the Knowledge Center and see what other people have written about what they've done in this similar situation. People know weird things, and you need to plug in people's brains to each other so that they understand if there's a balloon animal expert at camp, or if there's a sword fighting expert, or somebody speaks French, or someone used to teach sumo wrestling, or someone can edit digital video like Spielberg, whatever it happens to be. We'll talk about this in detail later and how to do this and how you can capture this kind of information and facilitate this kind of knowledge transfer. Okay, on to slide 8. Homesick. That's actually me when I was at camp, and I was quite a homesick little camper. At Camp Reinvent the Wheel, the counselor deals with it as best he can and gets some suggestions from his supervisor, you know, and sidles up and just sort of uses what he knows to try and work with the child and help him through it. Now, Camp Knowledge is Power. They have best practice methods. You can read about homesickness in Dr. Thurber's book, The Summer Camp Handbook. There's Camping Magazine articles on homesickness that are available for the counselor to read about. If they want more help, they can go to the Knowledge Center and see who's really had a lot of experience with this. They can get an experienced supervisor. Not all supervisors have had a lot of experience with homesickness. They can find out who that is and ask them to help and get some coaching. Okay, so those are 3 stories that just give you a very brief idea of knowledge management. And the survey hopefully would give you a much broader sense of it. On to slide 9. So now let me give you a quick overview of knowledge management. It's basically the idea that you avoid losing the recipe. You're no longer camp amnesia. You know, they say that organizations have amnesia, organizational amnesia. They just forget what they know. They forget what happens to them and what the people inside know, especially after they're gone. You break the Twilight Zone trial and error loop. You don't reinvent the wheel anymore. Once you've got it, you've got it. Another name for this is Project OWL, Orchestrating Wisdom and Learning. I really like the name of that because knowledge management is something that is very formal and sort of dry and dusty. But OWL has a great campy name to it. And Orchestrating Wisdom and Learning is something that, you know, you can almost kind of sing. It's a nice flowing phrase, and it's less hostile and cold. So I use OWL throughout this presentation. Okay, on to slide 10. Formal definition of KM is knowledge is the capacity for effective action. It's giving the people the tools they need to be more successful. It's the systematic process of identifying, capturing, and transferring knowledge people can use to improve. Don't worry about the definitions really so much. It'll make much more sense to you as we go along. I know it's kind of this nebulous concept of knowledge management, but believe me, by the time we're done, you'll have a very concrete idea of what it is and how to do it. Okay, on to slide 11. As I mentioned, all this started around 1995, believe it or not. I mean, it's incredible to think, but organizations weren't doing knowledge management prior to this, you know, by and large. The American Productivity and Quality Center, the APQC, held the first conference on it called the Knowledge Imperative Symposium. I went to that conference, and at first, everyone was just kind of getting familiar with the idea and what it was and why it might be useful. But now, 6, almost 7 years later, the cartographers have made a map. People have gone down the wrong roads, gone down the right roads, figured out the left and the right and how to basically go about this. We have a map. And that is what I'm going to convey to you. Let me cover a little bit about why knowledge management is so valuable. I mean, you have a sense of it a little bit from doing the survey and the stories and what it is and such, but let me get a little bit more specific about why knowledge management is so valuable. And I'll do that over 3 slides. First, efficiency. It's the time and energy to recreate knowledge. And the damage that sometimes creates. The damage is something like wasted energy. The damage is safety. There was a camp that had a riflery program, and you had to position the steel backdrops at a certain angle. And once the longtime riflery instructor left, nobody really remembered that or knew that, and they repositioned them the wrong way, and the first few times they got some ricochets. So damage could be safety. The damage could be that inspiring staff story, that really great story that fired up the staff. That, once the person who used to tell it was gone for a little while, people kind of forget about. Or if the director left, those stories the director had are gone with them. It's the 5 years of experience in the unit head that's gone. That person who was there, nurturing and learning every summer about how to care for these campers. When they were gone, they took the vast majority of knowledge they gained over those years with them, most likely. With good knowledge, people can make better decisions faster and have more intelligent action. So, the best way to run sailing here at this camp. What really works great at archery. Oh, well, the counselor has missed curfew again. You know, what have people done in the past? What works? What do you do in this situation? These are elements of knowledge management. And this is all sort of grouped under the idea of efficiency. Next point, empowered staff who grow themselves, each other, and the camp. It's just-in-time training. You know, right when they need it, they're like, oh, I really need that information, and they can get it. And they can get it at virtually no cost to the camp, because they can just go to the OWL and find that information. And when a staff member has a question, that is the teachable moment. And if they've got a place where they can ask a zillion questions and get answers without bothering busy people, they're far more likely to do it. Orchestrating staff teaching staff. Again, I'll talk about this more. This is that people-to-people effort. It's plugging people into each other's brains. And camp benefits from better staff with less effort. So these are empowering staff is a huge benefit of knowledge management. Energizing innovation. You spend less time creating new knowledge instead of recreating, you spend more time creating new knowledge instead of recreating old knowledge. There was a camp once that had a carnival activity, and the director knew all about the carnival, where everything was, what the activities were, etc. And so he would just sort of tell people what the ideas were and have them sign up for it and what. But it just sort of kept things going like they were. Not so many new ideas. Every now and then, one or two. But if you capture the knowledge of carnival and you keep a list and directions and what works and what didn't for all the activities, and you keep adding to that, eventually over time, you get an incredible sort of book of knowledge about the carnival and all the ways to run it and to run it well that just grows and gets better and better. Also, again, when people aren't recreating and relearning knowledge, it frees them up to create new ideas. The carnival continually gets better and reaches new levels every year that amaze. Staff motivation. It's a perk. Why? Well, in the survey I mentioned a couple reasons. When you have something like all the ideas that you've learned over the years about what staff can do on their time off, at camp, away from camp, on their days off, and it's well-researched, it has information, sort of like, you know, a rough guide or Lonely Planet guide to camp and outside of camp with reviews and all that sort of thing, they find that an incredible staff perk. Also, they like knowing how to do their job better. It makes them feel good and feel supported, and a knowledge management center does that. See the staff motivation resource for more. Okay, let's move on to slide 13. So why is it valuable 2 of 3? There's a more skilled workforce with less person-to-person training of explicit knowledge. And by explicit, I mean something that can be transferred on paper. It's easy to transfer knowledge just sort of by looking at it. I'll get more into this in just a minute. Anyway, the point of this is that a lot of the time, people keep asking the same questions over and over again. And when that happens, that's a perfect opportunity for knowledge management. You can get a more skilled workforce when people start, primarily, asking questions that they can't just find out themselves. The counselors know more, and the administration can focus on other things and higher-order questions. Now, I don't want you to think that the questions stop, or even that they become less frequent. You get just as many questions. It's just that they get better. They're more interesting, and they're more useful to you and them. Second point, people walk out the door every summer. And for most camps, it's around 50% of their staff, and they take most of the learning with them. I always think at the end of the summer of watching this library just walk out the door. Now, in large organizations, a turnover rate around 10 or 15% is fairly normal, but they try and keep it down below 10% because they understand the incredible loss that is. And these days, with knowledge management, even far more so. In fact, some people are putting in contracts that when people leave, they are required to go forth and enter and sort of capture the knowledge they've learned before they leave. If they're fired, of course, that's a different story. But people are working it in because they realize that that's incredibly valuable knowledge that's leaving. And with camps, it's 50%, more than almost any other organization. It's getting a 70 on the survey. As the stories and the survey illustrate, it's incredibly valuable in so many ways. And when you look at the cost of not measuring it and not capturing that knowledge, it's very high. And I'll get to that again throughout this presentation. And lastly, simply because it's a tool to help you achieve your mission and outcomes. But let's be really specific about that. Your outcomes might be fun. They might be satisfied parents. They might be an increased social skills or environmental attitudes and awareness and behaviors or a better diet or skill development. These are the things that knowledge management can make a big difference in helping to improve. Okay, on to the next slide, 14. Why is it valuable? Well, Rank Xerox reduced cost by $1 billion by using knowledge management. Texas Instruments saved roughly $1.5 billion in 2 years in their chip plants alone. It's one of the great gold stories of knowledge management. And incredible, they didn't even have to build two entire plants just because they captured the knowledge they already had in existing plants and were able to increase efficiency so much they didn't need to build anymore. Ernst & Young experienced a tenfold growth in revenue. Tenfold growth in revenue. Now remember, for all these examples, these people only started in around 1995, experienced a tenfold growth in revenue. Chevron reduced operating costs from $9.4 billion to $7.4 billion, a $2 billion savings. Buckman Laboratories, their operating profit per associate went up 93%. Siemens realized a return of investment ratio of 10 to 1. IBM paid $3.5 billion for Lotus when it was worth only about $500 million in accounting terms. Why did they pay that much more? Because of the knowledge the people had. Knowledge is incredibly valuable. Capturing that knowledge is incredibly valuable, as all of these firms have found out. But it really isn't all just about the money, although that's good too. It's about, again, the outcomes of a camp experience and improving those. So, these and other organizations recognized early on many other managers are just beginning to figure out that inside their own organizations lies, unknown and untapped, a vast treasure house of knowledge, of know-how, and of best practices. Most camps aren't large organizations, but they can achieve significant economic gains as well, often in the range of around 5 to 1, I think. Not quite 10 to 1, which tends to be standard for a knowledge management effort, but I think 5 to 1 is definitely achievable. Okay, on to slide 15. So before we go on, I need to dissect sort of knowledge. And I realize this is sort of jargony term, explicit, tacit, whatever, but it is useful. And there isn't another way really to convey these ideas in a short phrase or just a word. So explicit knowledge, this accounts for about 20% of useful knowledge. If you see it, you know it. It's something you can touch and see all by your lonesome. It's paper, usually. It's articles, it's summaries, it's books, it's that kind of thing. It's digital databases, it's internet. It's media, it's stuff you can watch and listen to. And when you want to increase explicit knowledge, more often than not, you buy things. Tacit knowledge, 80% of the useful knowledge, is experience. It's know-how. Excuse me. Know-how, insight, intuition, skills. It's that stuff between your ears. It's smelling your neighbor. I mean, it's hard to describe what people smell like. I mean, there's rarely the words to really describe it well, because that's the sort of, you just have to experience it. Describing blue to someone who is blind from birth, how do you do that? I mean, you just kind of have to experience it. It's the third point, you know, being a director from just reading, viewing, and listening. It's not enough. You have to be there. You have to experience it. There's a learning curve. There's, you know, experience involved. So when you want tacit knowledge, more often than not, you buy people. Again, 80% of the useful knowledge is here, which is why keeping staff and returning staff, as we all know, is incredibly valuable. It's also why the principles and staff training best practices, the other resource, which focuses on how to transfer tacit knowledge, is so elemental and key to a successful camp experience. And I highly recommend you check that one out. For tacit knowledge, there needs to be, you know, that sort of training element. And for people who have these abilities, there needs to be sort of a matchmaker or a broker who puts people together, sort of the mentor model. But although I've been focusing on tacit, explicit knowledge isn't chopped liver either. It's very useful as well. And many of the benefits can be obtained just by managing explicit knowledge. Okay, let's move on to slide 16. So here's the process. I've made it linear, but it's really circular. But let me just go through it for really quickly. Basically, you just create and collect knowledge in various ways. You identify what's valuable. You take that valuable knowledge and you adapt it to your specific needs in your camp, which is often where the process stops. You know, it's sort of the stack of death on the drawer or on the floor or somewhere that just never gets touched. But if it does go through that adaptation stage and you apply it to yourself or your camp or you make it useful, then after that, you organize it and finally use it. I know this seems incredibly easy and mundane, and it isn't rocket science, but keeping this model in mind will be helpful. Think of it as just an outline, and that's what we're going to use as we go through the process of the knowledge management system. So first, on to slide 17. Now let's start with creating and collecting knowledge. Creating knowledge first is create a marketplace for ideas so that people want to create knowledge. You know, this is focused more on in the resource, the learning camp, but you should get at least 6 to 9 or 10 suggestions per staff member per summer. So you should have, if you have, you know, a staff of 50, you would have hundreds of suggestions. Place value on ideas, soft rewards instead of sort of the hard money kind of things. Support for risk-taking, the art and science of mistakes resource. Promoting passion, it's in the staff motivation resource. And having time and resources to create the knowledge, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But these are the things that really create knowledge. Collecting knowledge is just, you know, as these list on the right, you know, going to conference sessions, getting a book, a magazine, doing a best practice search, seeing what else somebody else is doing, hiring a consultant, through the media, the internet, papers, whatnot, networking with other people, sort of word of mouth, trying to figure something out there, personal experience, you just work it out. Another camp that you went to or one of your staff went to and they bring things back. You know, these are all methods of collecting of knowledge. Simple. So the next trick is identifying what is valuable and all of that knowledge that is created and generated and collected. So on to slide 18. Knowledge is valuable information in action. So you don't want to grab the deluge of knowledge that you can get from the previous one. You only want to figure out what is of value. It isn't sort of nice to have. And you don't just sort of capture things and throw them out there for people to use, because that's how you get a knowledge junkyard. And there was one camp that sort of did that. They collected all this stuff from conference information to magazine articles, and they just sort of threw it all out there. Tons of books. They got all these books from the ACA, and they threw it all out there for the staff. And, you know, I'm sure that's all nice to have out there, but that is the definition of a knowledge junkyard. And we'll talk more about that later. So the knowledge isn't just nice to have. You're identifying knowledge that is of real, concrete, incredible value. You really want to capture the 20% that is of the highest value and let the rest go. This is the rule of thumb that seems to work well. What critical capability does the knowledge give you? It isn't just general knowledge out there that should be useful or might be useful, or lesson plans and historical data. It's not pack rat nirvana. It's gathering knowledge that gives you critical capabilities, valuable information and action. You should always say, how useful is this? How useful is this? Will it be used? How is it going to provide value? I'll talk about this more when we discuss knowledge junkyards again and how to avoid them. So on to slide 19. So here we are. I just very quickly just went through create, collect, identify, and now into the sort of the core of it here, adapting, organizing, and using. Pretty straightforward, but the rest isn't as obvious. On to slide 20. So the first of the adaptation stage, we're going through three slides here, and the first is explicit to explicit. And again, remember, the tacit is the sort of between the ears, kind of describe the color blue to somebody who's blind from birth. And explicit is the paper knowledge, the stuff you can just tell somebody, that easy to transfer, crisp kind of knowledge. So when you adapt, you want to take information and turn it into knowledge. So this presentation, I went through all these conferences that I've been through on knowledge management over the years, the stacks of books I have on it, well over 1,000 pages of information, and took all that information and distilled just the knowledge that was very specific to camps. Now again, you're going to have to adapt this because I made this general because I don't, you know, this who could be listening to this could be a wide variety of camps and other organizations. So I sort of left it, believe it or not, on a bit more of a general stage. And this should be adapted yet again for your specific situation. Storytelling anthologies. You know, these are information. They often have 100, 200 stories. Let's say you've got a few of these, you've got 500 stories. That's a lot of information, but it isn't knowledge. To make it knowledge would mean going through and saying, okay, I want to categorize these. If I want a story about bullies, or I want a story about being a custodian of nature, or I want a story about scapegoating, or group getting along together, this kind of thing, whatever. It's finding great stories that fit those categories and organizing them. That is taking information and making it knowledge. Bookshelf for reference. Behavior management. Again, all these books on behavior management are information, and they have to be distilled and captured in order to be knowledge. Books in general are a no-no, and I'll go over this again later. They definitely have a place at camp, and books definitely have value, but most of the time, the vast majority of the time, they qualify as information. They have to be adapted to be more specific and useful. Camping magazine is sometimes knowledge, but more often than not, it really needs to be further adapted to your situation. Sort the wheat from the chaff. This is really a big idea. Must be knowledge of value, or else you'll build it and they won't come. This is kind of part of identify, but it happens again here too, because you're identifying again, at this stage, when you're adapting, as you're going through it and trying to sort it out, you're continuing to identify knowledge of value. Make it relevant for your specific camp. This takes a lot of effort, but increases the value and its use, and that's what yields the real benefits. You need to adapt it to your specific environment, your needs, your people, your culture. Information is like Legos. It's data. We use information and Legos to create knowledge. So if you have all this sort of information or Legos around, you sort of build it up and you create something. And that something is far more useful than the bits and bobs that we're laying around. Likewise, if you want to extend the analogy, you could have different sets of Legos like they do now, all sorts of different shapes and sizes. And they, you know, in the old days, they used to just be able to just one set fit all. But now there's so many different sizes and shapes and kits and whatnot that you have to really carefully sort through those to get the elements that are going to work to build something valuable. All right, so that's the explicit to explicit element. Let's go on to slide 21. Explicit to tacit. So you're taking something that is easy to understand and making it more valuable by getting deeper into it, understanding more about it. You've built a better mousetrap. You've improved on the recipe. You've mastered the material and you've transported it, transformed it into something tacit, something that you understand after experience. It's the better tennis lesson than the lesson plan had. It's a deeper understanding of behavior management than the stuff you were reading about. You're better at it now. So once you know more and you have it in a better state, you've got this intangible skill that people can't just get from paper anymore. And so what you do with it is either you become a trainer for others yourself, tacit to tacit transfer, talk about that next, or you take the new knowledge and you make it explicit again, tacit to explicit again, talk about this again in just a second. So flip to slide 22 and we'll talk about those two. Okay, first, tacit to tacit. Again, this is something you have to experience. It's hard to read about archery and be good at it. It's hard to read about leadership and be good at it. It's hard to learn a musical instrument from a book. It's something that really needs to be transferred from person to person to either be learned or to be learned efficiently or to be learned well. And when it's adapted on the fly from the teacher to the student. And it's facilitated through the yellow pages, and we'll be going over this next, the next slide. So how is it done? Well, the Staff Training Best Practices resource details how tacit knowledge is transferred from person to person. Okay, on to the next column off there. Tacit to explicit. So this is when you take the time to write or record what you know. You write an article or a book. You know, if you know tons about behavior management, you'll do write parenting books. If you know tons about behavior management and you've written a parenting book, now you take it and you apply it specifically to camps. So that's taking something internal and sort of hard to transfer and making it explicit. Doing this presentation. It's the idea of creating a targeted summary of what you know so that people can take what you've written or talked about and do what you know, at least to a degree. You know you did a bad job. You did a bad job of it when people can't understand most of what you know from the explicit information. Now, not all knowledge definitely can be transferred from tacit to explicit. It's a difficult thing to do. But libraries are full of books of people trying to take the tacit and making it explicit. Okay. On to slide 23. Organizing knowledge. So this is the second to last step in the knowledge management process. The first bit, and grab your handout for this, because we're going to go over a few of the elements in there, is the catalog. So the catalog is sort of the index. It's the card catalog at the library. Remember those quaint little things? It's this overview of what's in the knowledge management. So the first few pages after the survey of the handout go through and detail what a catalog, at least the meta elements of it, would look like. And at the top, I have this numbered 1, 2, 3, and 4. This might seem daunting. I mean, there's 4 pages in here of all these things that could be captured in a knowledge management system. And if you look at that, you might be completely overwhelmed. Well, really, you don't want to capture all knowledge again. You only want to capture the knowledge that's going to be useful, that's going to provide high value, and that is people are going to flock to. They're really going to want it. So you can rank all of these areas that I've sort of written down as a brainstorm here, these 4 pages of domains, and rank them. 1, meaning it's extremely high value, and it's the first that should be done. 2, you know, it's still high value. 3, yeah, well, there's some stuff of value in it. 4, little or no value. And left blank, it has no value. And there's no need to capture it. It won't provide anything extra. So if you go through, you won't get that many ones of things that are extraordinarily high value that are going to be of immediate benefit. There will be quite a few, but it's not going to be the majority probably. So once you've got that, you sort of have for yourself a plan of how to go about a knowledge management system. But I'm kind of jumping the gun and getting further along here, but This is sort of an organizing scheme, and hopefully this will help you as you go through and think about what kind of knowledge can be captured. Everything from program areas to rainy days to early morning experiences to stories to the first and last day of camp, marketing, human resources, traditions, history, culture, all sorts of things. Okay, on to the second point, the Yellow Pages. Again, there's a sample in the appendix, and if you'll pull that out, it says at the top, Yellow Pages entry 4, and then blank, where you would write the person's name in. And this helps organize that sort of people-to-people, plugging people's brains into each other, that tacit knowledge that's 80% of the knowledge that's out there. This is the key form for that transfer at camps. And it has camp skills, a bunch of camp skills that you would limit to the ones that are relevant to your camp. And then other skills I have that I have, and you can give them sort of a reference index of skills sort of for brainstorming purposes. Something you probably didn't know I could do. That might be more skills, but it might just be something interesting that people might want to flip through the Yellow Pages and see what people know. Something you didn't know about me, along the same lines, might also be a skill or something useful, but it could just be something interesting. And a favorite quote, same idea. And up at the right, the Myers-Briggs type indicator and other jobs I've held in my life. These are useful in a sense, but they're also there to intrigue people. And you'll find that when you use this form, people are going to go through and flip through this binder that has the Yellow Pages for all the staff and what they've written. Because if it's a value to the leadership and they have people go through this in a dedicated way, there's really going to be a lot of interesting stuff in there. Okay, enough about that. So a little bit about the three-ring binders. I really like to use white three-ring binders because they're easy to label, they're clean, they're open, they're easy to flip through, they're easy to manage, they're attractive, they're a constant visible reminder that the knowledge is out there. Filing cabinets, on the other hand, are hidden, they're very office-like, they're not very library-like. You know, at the library there aren't filing cabinets of books. People store things in there. It's the idea of storage. It's not that you really use things in a filing cabinet so much. It's a place of storage. And use and easy drop dramatically from filing cabinets. So binders are really the way to go for a knowledge management system. Enough about that. On to the last point here. Books are valuable, but 95% of the time they provide information. You really need to go in and identify what is of real value and adapt and distill that for your camp. So books should be in a separate area from the Knowledge Management Center or the OWL Center. They can be sort of off to the side, but they should be distinctly separate as an area and a catalog and everything. And the Knowledge Management or the OWL Center should be its own area and its own element. And that really helps because this is the place where the knowledge has been adapted. And it helps because people come here and they know they'll find valuable stuff. Again, we'll talk about that more as we go along. So let's go to slide 24, the Knowledge Center. It's a place you want people to be. It's a place they can relax. Maybe it's a part of the staff house or lounge. There's chairs, there's tables, there's paper, there's pens, there's light. You know, it's a warm space where people want to be. It should be very easily accessible, very, very easily accessible. You don't want to make it difficult for people. You don't want to put it in an area that's really out of the way. You don't want people to walk for 10 or 15 minutes to get there. It'll get used less. You want it to be central, and you want it to be open all the time. The bulletin board serves as a reminder, information, piques interest. Most of the information on the bulletin board should change. And you can have things, as it says up here, success story of the week, very important, we'll talk about that again. The knowledge highlight of the week by major area, so in, you know, sports and games, here's something, for campfires, here's something, for bedtime, here's something, what have you, different areas, a knowledge highlight of the week. Did you know something from the Knowledge Management Center that's interesting? A featured tidbit from the Yellow Pages that you can pull out. Tips on creating a good entry. These are things that would be on the bulletin board next to the Knowledge Management Center. Okay. Slide 25. Check out the owl. Well, as you can see, there's this person. He's getting buried under the stack of this deluge of information. That is a junkyard. When someone doesn't want to go to the Knowledge Center, to the owl, because they just feel there's too much there and they just can't handle it, or they just know it's not going to be a good use of their time, that's when you've got a knowledge junkyard. And how to fight a knowledge junkyard is on slide 26. How to fight it, in a few words, is it's all about value. Is it useful? Is it providing value? You reevaluate that by looking at whether or not things are information or knowledge. And one way to do that is to have experts come in and review it. Or, if it's the end of the summer or it's a slow time or something, you can send out your binders to an expert and have them review what's in there and say, you know, what is the really, really useful knowledge here? Knowledge has a half-life. There is more information in one issue of the New York Times than was available to anyone in their entire life 300 years ago. Knowledge has a half-life, and it's getting more and more so all the time. So you have to go back and update it and make sure things are current and continue to provide value. Using the log. Okay, so let's go back to the appendix here and have a look at the log. This is something that's useful. It's called the Project Owl Log at the top, and it's basically a big table, and it says this owl log belongs to, and it has the date, the binder name, the resource name, and the rating. And the ratings go from essentially of no value, of little value, of some value, of significant value, up to of exceptional value. And what people do is every time they use something, they write down, you know, they have their own sheet, you know, when it was, what it was, and what they thought of it. And when you look at this, it's very, very clear, very, very quickly, what is being used, what isn't, and how valuable people think it is. The logs are an enormous help with fighting the knowledge junkyard, assessing its use and monitoring its use. And we'll talk about monitoring its use again in a minute. So that's another really great way to fight the knowledge junkyard. Next point at the bottom here. So much knowledge that the result is information. You have to keep really good order. You've got to have that catalog. In each knowledge binder, you know, keep things in binders, have an index in the beginning or a table of contents so that people understand what's there. Have titles on the top of all the pages. Have dividers between sections. Make sure it's clean. Make sure it's formatted. Do it on the computer if it wasn't clearly written. Make sure you reapply the 80-20 rule. Remember, only 20% of knowledge is useful. The other 80% could probably be thrown out. And you can also repackage it like a power pack. You know, this presentation and the handout altogether is a power pack on knowledge management. It isn't the, you know, 1,000 pages plus all the conference notes. It's just the core need-to-know kind of information. So repackaging things in sort of power packs. There's more information in that in the handout as well. Okay, so those are the main elements in fighting a knowledge junkyard, which is absolutely critical. If you have a knowledge junkyard, it's going to be difficult for people to use it, and you won't reap the full benefits. It's a continual effort to make sure that that isn't the case. All right, on to slide number 27, use. Let's start on the left here, getting it used. Getting it used, you have magnet content, something that really draws people in. So if it's archery, have something incredible about archery there. If it's an evening program, have something incredible, some really killer information there. Whatever it is, have some magnet content that will draw the various people's interests in. Success stories are absolutely critical. You share them at staff meetings. You put them on the bulletin board. You let people know that this whole thing is working and that it's valuable. Say, you know, oh my God, John looked in the owl and he used this Embers activity and I went by his cabin and it was awesome. Or Jane learned about astronomy from Sally and I saw her out on the field doing it, and I, you know, she was just talking about the stars, and the kids were rapt with attention. It was incredible. Have a success stories binder. You know, all these, you know, killer stories that have happened that tell why Knowledge Center, the OWL, is so valuable. Success stories, especially in the beginning, are critical to getting use out of it. This is a point that is just reiterated over and over and over again in the whole knowledge management industry. Success stories, success stories, success stories. Also, it often takes about 3 years to really get a good knowledge management system off the ground. After that, success stories tend to be less useful, but in that first period, they're absolutely necessary. If you got a question, go to the OWL. You know, again, it's that teachable moment. You know, when the counselor has that question because they don't know, that's when they're really open to learning. And if they can get that from the OWL, great. You know, it might be from an explicit knowledge, or it might be something from the Yellow Pages. Or, as I said before, it might be that they've gotten a lot of information and knowledge, useful knowledge out that way. And because of that, it's opened them up to asking sort of new questions that aren't in there. And that kind of even more valuable question is what they can come to you for. Eliminate the knowledge junkyard we've already talked about. Facilitators, culture, structures, and policies is what we're going to get to next. So working with use over on the right. Involve the staff from day one. Continuous involvement. Everyone thinks their baby is beautiful, but when you involve staff in its creation, they think it's beautiful too. So create it together, and then they'll be more invested. During orientation, have everyone contribute one thing. Give them a tour of the whole Knowledge Management Center and sort of point it out on your way through a tour through camp, and it's an uphill battle. The log form, we already talked about a little bit. When you have that log, it really helps monitor use, encourage use, and help make sure that the information in there is useful. If you have a log for the directors and the supervisors, then everyone knows that you're really walking the talk here. And it makes the leaders helps them in their quest to think the knowledge is valuable to themselves as well. Suggestions forms. Okay, let's have a quick look in the appendix. There's a couple in there. One's called Project OWL's suggestions. Stop, start, continue. Another one is a specific OWL resource critique. Basically, you're asking what way can it be improved? If you were given the time, could you do it? And how long would it take you? These are just two forms. You have a stack of them next to the OWL Center. And people can write in and tell you how things can be improved, basically. And getting those sort of suggestions is only going to help you continually to get a better system. And you'll create knowledge on how to do this that has yet to be identified by myself or others. Second to last point, interview low users. So when you look at the logs and it's, you know, a month into the summer and there's maybe only one or two things written down, fine, go up to these people and figure out why that is. And last, refine, refine, refine. For use to work, it shouldn't be an onerous and tedious task. This shouldn't be something that people dread, or that they're like, oh God, I got to do this now, or oh my God, I haven't done an OWL thing yet. It shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be a groan. It should be something that's a joy. And it's kind of like sex. If it doesn't feel good, you're doing it wrong. Refine, refine, refine. And I'll talk about in the next, the culture, the process, the structures, and the policies of how to create an overall system so that it isn't a groan, and it definitely isn't a joy, and people are really looking forward to using it, and it just sort of happens without anybody saying anything. So, with that preface, on to slide number 28. So here it is again. Creating, collecting, identifying knowledge, the whole little process. Again, we create knowledge every summer. You collect knowledge all the time. And identifying it, you're trying to sort it out and find the true value. And then you adapt it to your needs and how it will be transferred. This is the distilling point, the crunching it down, the making sure it's of true value to you and your situation, in your camp, and your culture. And this is also where we tend to have the stacker drawer of death, because people don't often have time to sort of go through past this adapting stage. After that is the organizing, where you have the knowledge center and you fight the knowledge junkyard. And last is use. You want to get it used and you want to work with use, as we just talked about. And maybe all this seems just too easy and kindergarten-like. I don't know. But this is an overview of the major points. Use it as a checklist and assess your success. Okay, on to slide 29. So now we're going to go over the facilitators, the culture, the structures, and the policies. So first, the cultural facilitators. Starting on the left, what is culture? Well, culture is really the way we do things around here. And to make that more explicit, as I do in the presentation, and if you're brave, you can do this when you're listening to this, you know, think about, or do, if you're feeling in a playful mood, how do you act when you're in a movie theater and do that? How do you act when you're in a roller coaster? How do you act when you're in a fancy restaurant? How about a punk rock concert? Or a grocery store? All of those places have their culture. We understand the way things happen there, how people are going to act. We know what's going to happen. That's the culture. It's the norms and values and sort of key assumptions that drive people's behavior. So once upon a time, Southwest Airlines is fabled for their culture, because it's not that they're doing anything really special that other airlines couldn't do. It's because they could. It's that their culture, it enables them to implement those systems in a much better way, in a way that the other airlines can't do. And Southwest Airlines has remained profitable in its entire history. They've never really lost money. They're far more profitable than any other airline by far, and everyone's ecstatic to work there. Again, it's their culture. Culture can really hurt the OWL, or knowledge management, because as it happened at one camp, they sort of built an initial OWL center, and very few people really used it. The quality was decent, but the norms and values around it didn't fit. People were competitive. There wasn't time to go into it. There was no value for doing it, etc. The cultural facilitators weren't there. The fourth point, it's the norms and values that are truly alive at camp. Culture is the way people do things. It's the lifeblood. It's what people figure out after a week of being there of how to act. And the last point, pep talks, admonitions, and consequences all indicate a broken culture to some degree and our structures. So why are those things necessary? They're necessary because the norms and values of the people who need the admonitions and the consequences and whatnot are different. They're incongruent from what you want to happen. So talking and consequencing folks into knowledge management isn't going to get you very far at all. So, harnessing the power. What do you do when you want to facilitate the culture? Well, you need to have a learning camp, which is another resource entirely, but a few values we want to have present are that we trust each other, we share freely and openly, mistakes are for learning, and we have teamwork and collaboration. Try hanging those espoused values up and then ask your staff to tell you incidents and structures that make them true and not true. And if at the end of that you have a really long list of how the people's behaviors and the way the leadership acts and the way things are structured facilitate those things, then you know that you have a culture that fosters at least that element of a learning camp. Second point, leadership is supportive via structures, policies, and modeling. Knowledge is not power by default. The ability to act on that knowledge is power. People often make that mistake that knowledge is power, and it isn't, because quite often people know things and just don't have the ability to act on what they know. So staff have to be empowered to act on the knowledge, and that happens because the leadership has created structures and policies, and they model it themselves, which we'll get into a little bit more. It certainly doesn't hurt to have a champion or evangelist who is really gung-ho about it. It constantly beats the drum about using the OWL. And last, institute knowledge management simultaneously. Tie it into the mission, the goals, and the outcomes. You don't really change your culture and then institute knowledge management. You really do it simultaneously because, in a symbiotic way, they really drive each other. Success stories about how knowledge management is serving to facilitate your mission, goals, and outcomes also help a lot. There's much more on this in the culture resource, and I've just sort of briefly touched on this with about 9 or so points. So I'll leave the rest to the culture resource. But culture is definitely a big facilitator of an OWL Center. So now on to slide 31. Structural facilitators. Now again, as I note at the top here, this is for a best practice system. This is for the end goal. This is where you want to be when you're, you know, in high performance knowledge management mode. And it might take a little while to get there, but this is the best practice. First, training. During orientation, you introduce it, you explain it, you give people time to browse through the OWL Center, quite a bit of time, and you give them time to create entries, in which way they'll take some ownership over it. Second point, unconflicted counselor and administration time. And this might be the hardest one to do, but this is also where the expense, a large expense of knowledge management at camps come from. It comes from, and I'll talk about the expense later, but a lot of the money that I'm talking about comes from facilitating this element. It's the unconflicted counselor administration time, a period once a week where people are dedicated to using and adding to the OWL Center. And if people are piled higher and deeper, and that isn't possible, and there isn't the time, if it's one more thing, then you're dead. You have to provide the time. And if you don't, you're going to see very limited results. It does take money. But as they say, you know, if it takes money to make money, it certainly takes time to make and use knowledge. Again, we'll talk about this on the next slide. A post-activity review. So after you've learned something, there has to be the time to write it down. So after people who are in charge of running an evening program or a Vespers or a chapel or a morning experience or what have you, there should be time available for them to write down what they've learned. And that isn't always necessary because much of what they've learned or what they were doing was already in there. But when it isn't, there's time for that. Over on the right, OWL parties. So you have time as a team and time as individuals, dedicated time, often between sessions if that's possible, where people get together and just focus on the OWL, on using it and contributing to it. Initial time investment, if you're starting from zero, there's going to be a significant amount of time to kick this off. You know, I'm not going to lie to you, it's going to take a big push. But after that, it's just a steady state of continuous improvement. And when you look at that resource on innovation and continuous improvement, you'll see how valuable that mindset is. Lastly, the librarian. This isn't a handout. You can read it. I'm not going to go over it. But it really helps to have somebody, even part-time, who's there, who can fill the role of the knowledge engineer, analyst, manager, and broker. And again, I'm not going to go over this, but someone in that role helps a lot. It's one more thing piled on top of what the director does. You aren't going to get the full benefit of a knowledge center. Okay, on to slide 32. Money, policy facilitator. You have to buy the space, the binders, the bulletin board, the decorations, and the most expensive thing is staff time. It might involve, you know, once you're firmly dedicated to this, hiring another person, or maybe two, or however many it is, or creating a person who's split between the librarian role and something else. It takes a lot of money to do this. It isn't free, but it does pay off in spades. Big business find that instituting a knowledge management system pays off by a factor of 10 to 1. For every $1 they put into it, they get 10 back. And they figured this out carefully, and it's proven over and over and over again. And some people do much, much, much better than that. But 10 to 1 seems to be the standard. At camps, you might find that it's more along the lines of 5-to-1. For every $1 you put into it, you get $5 back. It needs to be a line item in the budget. People hate doing this, but it really does need to be one. In big business, they have a line item for knowledge management, and it varies from 2 to 4% of gross revenues, as amazing as that seems when we're talking billion-dollar industries. A best practice camp will have a 0.5% to 1% of gross revenues dedicated to knowledge management. And don't think of it as a sunk cost, because it isn't. It's an investment. And when you do knowledge management well and you implement the best practice as I'm laying it out here, you will find that for every dollar you invest, you get several back. Maybe 5 and maybe even 10. I don't know. A study of it hasn't been done in camps yet. So on the bottom here then, after money, put owl use on performance appraisals. It serves as a checkup and demonstrates the importance. When it's on a performance review, people are like, oh, well, you know, this really does matter to them. And a low score should have some weight. It should be for promotion, for status, for reference, for privilege. A low score on an owl, on the owl log, or on the performance evaluation should carry some kind of weight, whatever that is. But you don't want the owl to be a big stick. You want people to be responsible, and hopefully you've hired people and you've done all the other things for use and culture where it will be valuable, and that's not going to be the case. But if people aren't going to take the responsibility, that should have some consequences if that's necessary. Okay, on to slide 33. Last thing on the policy facilitators here, tangible rewards. It's not money, really, or anything of significant value, because there needs to be inherent value in the task. So there's this principle called the overjustification effect, and that is that when you pay people to do something that they would have done otherwise, they're far less likely to do it. And they did this, this has been proven over and over again. It's a psychological principle. They did it in schools. You know, they randomly assigned classes to do good works, and then, you know, for volunteer efforts and whatnot, and they paid some of them to do it, and they didn't pay others. And the people who were paid to do it did far less in terms of their efforts than those who weren't paid to do it, because they were over-justified for doing it. So they're like, you know, in people's minds, it's, why should I do this? You know, it must not be so wonderful or great if they have to pay me to do it. The second point is, it's a negative cultural precedent. The reason you people should do this is because it serves the mission and it serves their aim. Look more to the culture resource and the staff motivation resource for further explanation talking about this, but you don't want to do it because of a candy cane stick. You know, that's when you beat people with rewards, you know, a candy cane stick. It's a negative cultural precedent. A small reward, though, with little value is fine. T-shirts, you know, that says Camp Tall Tree Owl All-Star. You know, that's a corny name, but whatever you want to come up with, wherever with the staff want to come up, give it to them to think of small rewards along these lines. Or maybe a small carved wood owl or a plastic one or something, you know, that's really essentially no value, that shows just as a token of appreciation or of use. For the intangible rewards, use should be its own reward. It's the ability to do more, better, with results being their own reward. When people care about the results, the influence that they're able to have on the campers themselves and the camp, when they care about that, use is its own reward. Praise certainly doesn't hurt. You know, you notice the specific acts, public recognition here and there, but often it isn't really very necessary. Success stories are more so the case. The more value you place on it, the more it'll be used. Culture, performance evaluation, magnet content, the more value you've placed in the Owl Center in the first place, the more it's going to be used because the intangible rewards are there. Okay, so let's move on to slide 34. So wrapping up now, knowledge management is a journey, and there are stages of implementations, and I'll talk about that in a second. We'll glance at some of the rest of the dependencies, talk about the whole big picture, really, where this all fits in, and then talk about where to go for some more information, and then some wrapping up and some final thoughts. So the American Productivity, slide 35, and Quality Center's stages of implementation. They're kind enough to let me use this graphic, and here's what they found in their work for the past 7 years. First stage is getting started. Second, developing strategy. You know, here's how they sort of have figured out the process. And it's stage five, when it's institutionalized, is where you really get the big, big payoffs in all sorts of ways. And all these other things are facilitators that they put down: measures, technology, strategy, education, et cetera, et cetera. As a rough rule of thumb, on the survey at the beginning, if you got a 46 or so, figure you're around stage three. Okay, so I just wanted to give you an idea that it's a big picture, and you really want to start. People all start at stage one and eventually get to stage five. And again, often it takes several years to do that. Slide 36. Knowledge management is a journey. So where are you? Again, as you advance the stages, the return on investment goes up. Most camps tend to be on the explore and experiment kind of side. Some are even down no activity. Some are a little higher. And the higher you get on it, the higher the return of investment. And investment means, in this case, believe me, far more than money. Don't expect a lot of success until your third year, though. It tends to take about that long to really get a knowledge management center off and running and providing a return. Slide 37, just reiterate the benefits and the high investment that yields the high return. You energize innovation, you improve motivation, you reduce reinventing the wheel, you increase efficiency, you empower staff. It's a staff perk. As strange as that seems, it really is one. You increase staff abilities with less effort, you reap at least a 5-to-1 return on investment with full implementation, and you better achieve your outcomes and your vision. So for the last point, again, let's be more specific about this. Your outcomes and your vision. You're more fun, you have more satisfied customers all the way around. We could also include your staff. You increase social skills, you do a better job influencing environmental attitudes, behaviors, awareness. People have a better diet, there's better skill development. The quality and quantity of your success with the campers and staff goes way up. And if beyond the financial reason, for no other reason, that should be the reason to do this. Slide 38, valuable appendices galore. So we went over the domains and examples, kind of the 4-page catalog, and you can peruse that at your leisure. Again, start with only a few and start with the ones that are really going to be high value. The log form for all the benefits of that, for monitoring use, etc. The suggestion forms, both general and specific. And the Yellow Pages form, which is trying to work out the transfer, that brain-to-brain transfer of that tacit knowledge. The OWL librarian, you can read that on yourself, just different things that somebody who's managing knowledge would do. And lastly, the advanced knowledge management systems. And let me just touch on the last one. The promise of knowledge management for your customers is the last bit on that page. And when you use what you know to provide value to them, they won't forget you for it. Because camps know a lot about the outcomes they hope to instill. And when you help parents use that information that you have to further, you know, as they say, partnering with parents or whatnot, when you do that and you use you manage your knowledge to help your customer, to help the parent or help who have you, they are incredibly appreciative of it. Okay, slide 39, the big picture. So all of these 8 elements here are the meta elements of a learning camp, as it says in the bottom, the learning camp. You should look at that resource to get more information about these: personal mastery, mental models, external future scanning. I know they sound a little businessy, but they're fully described. There's even a survey in there, etc., for you to use. Very, very, very useful. But I wanted to give you the idea of where knowledge management fits in. It's not the whole enchilada. In fact, it's only one element of one of these 8 meta domains. So when you break out the team learning meta domain, you get 3 little subdomains in there. And it's team synergy, intelligence, true dialogue, and good cross-team communication. So that's the broad term for learning. There's quite a few things in there, and one of which is a knowledge management center. So to be a learning camp, this is one element involved. And look at that resource for the others. just to sort of give you the overall big picture of where we are here. On to slide 40, I've really left out so much here, so here's a few books that I think are pretty valuable. The first two, Dr. Odell is the leader in knowledge management, you know, bar none. And the American Productivity and Quality Center has a Passport to Success series. And the first two, they are knowledge management and stages of implementation. They're so cheap. I forget what they cost, but they're like $5 or something when you buy in bulk, or $9 or something. They're very cheap, very useful. She also wrote a book. And then there's some other things in there that's useful as well. The last one being the least useful. These are in order. Slide 41, six websites to check out for more information about knowledge management. And slide 42, first for the final thoughts, hope is not a method. To quote Dr. Odell, so you really want to have a systematic plan for implementing knowledge, and you want to make sure that when it is and isn't being used, you understand why. Be pragmatic rather than perfectionistic. Again, don't go from 0 to 100, because the G-force repercussions are really going to hurt you. This is something, if you're at the beginning stages, you're going to want to slowly ramp up over a period of 5 years. But you're going to want to ramp it up, you know, in lockstep manner. You're going to want continued improvement over the steps. You want to build a best practice system, as I said, over 5 years. And last point, it'll change your camp forever. You'll never be the same. When you score in the 60s and 70s on that survey, your life will be different. Your reality will change, and the abilities of your staff will amaze you. The continuity of the experience you care about will be much, much more solid. On to 43, dedicate your camps towards being higher learning organizations. Knowledge management, benchmarking are just two. Back to that big picture slide, there's a lot of stuff there. Knowledge management is one of them. Being a learning organization is incredibly powerful. Manage your culture well is also incredibly powerful. We touched on that here. Staff training best practices, the tacit knowledge transfer is dependent upon the information in the staff training best practices to do it well. And last, once upon a last time, imagine, slide 44, that when staff wonder what worked well in past archery programs, they know. How successful campfires are run? If you had these, you know, what were the best ideas in the 70s and the 80s? You know. How did prior staff deal with particular behavior problems or issues? You know, the scapegoating or the bullying or the shy child or whatnot. There's specific information available. What do excellent counselor letters home look like? There are examples. What staff learned from running a special event? It's in there. When people learn lessons from doing special events, it's in there. What indispensable knowledge did past nurses have? You had that great nurse for 5 years in the 70s, or in the 80s, or the early 90s, or whatnot, or that person last year was phenomenal. That knowledge is in there. What are fun activities for an out-of-camp trip? It's not a question. That knowledge is in there, and it would only grow. What are successful methods of building environmental attitudes, awareness, behaviors? That knowledge continuously grows and gets more valuable, so people are more effective. On the slide 45, imagine that the redundancy in effort would largely be eliminated. Imagine that time and energy spent recreating the wheel could be spent on designing a better wheel. Imagine that past mistakes would rarely be repeated for just a lack of knowing what the outcome of a certain decision or program is going to be. Imagine the camp saves 5 times its investment in knowledge management. And imagine that the children and staff would have a quantumly higher, better experience and outcomes. This is the promise of a good knowledge management system. Take small steps toward greater levels of knowledge management implementation, and enjoy the show. Thank you very much for listening to this. I know it was somewhat long and perhaps a little dry, but the knowledge into action will transform your camp.